Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
The following podcast has some fruity language. Sorry, my bad. So take care of who's listening around you. Kia ora koutou katoa, no mai hara mai to It's Personal with me, Anika Moore.
When people get offended by those things or say, oh, you're too political, you're always man bashing, I have to remember that they're not mad at me. You know, music holds up a mirror. And so when they see those things, they're just seeing their own reflection. They're not seeing what I'm saying. It's a reaction and of their own reflection. So I kind of go, oh, this is between you and the song.
Okay, today I'm talking with musician, and I'm actually biased because she's one of my best friends, Tammy Nelson. We're going to talk about life on the road, the duet with Willie Nelson, and lots and lots of kind of giggles. Lots of belly laughs, so tune in. So you are born in Toronto, Canada, and you are of First Nations heritage.
I am. So on my dad's side of the family, I have Ojibwe blood and Ojibwe heritage, which
beautiful.
Is really special.
So you fuck a papa back way back in time, right?
Yeah, way back in time. And that was it. But, you know, in Canada, as most colonized countries, it's very complicated. It's, you know, our people were very oppressed and had horrific things happen. You know, as everyone has seen in the news over the last few years, all of the discovery of the children and the residential schools, all of the bodies they're digging up. It's just, it's horrific. And so my grandmother was raised on Wasoxing Nation in Ontario. And when she was just young, her mother, who was Indigenous, died in childbirth. And so her father, who was German, then took her and her sisters to Southern Ontario and left the reservation. And she spent most of her life trying to hide the fact that she was Indigenous, even though she was very clearly, visibly Indigenous. But it was not something she liked to talk about. I think that, you know, she came from a generation where it was illegal for Indigenous people to gather in a group of more than three people by the government, you know, so you couldn't sit and have a coffee together in a restaurant.
I don't know this history. I know about the children being found, but I don't know any of the history. Mm. I know surface history. Were you brought up as First Nations?
No, I wasn't.
So you were brought up in mainly a Pākehā world then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Spiritually and soulfully, because I was brought up in Christchurch in a Pākehā world, but always having this feeling of being more grounded to Papatūānuku and Rangi Nui, you know? Did you ever have all those spiritual feelings of your whakapapa?
I think that I always knew my heritage, but did not have the opportunity to really explore it. Being raised in a very fundamental Christian household, it wasn't really until I left Canada and came to New Zealand and coming here and seeing how intertwined everything in New Zealand is with Indigenous culture. You know, I always say that...
Well, it was.
Well, but the difference is, like, I find, you know, they couldn't defeat the Māori. They had to come to an agreement. And, of course, that agreement was also crooked. But they couldn't defeat the Māori. And so they had to coexist. Mm-hmm. They had to find a way. Even though it was still oppressive, the Māori were so strong and still are that they don't tolerate. They're like, nope, and they fight every step of the way.
Pretty stubborn.
Yes.
We're really stubborn people.
And they're a warrior culture as well. And so the fact that the English just couldn't turn up and take over, they obviously tried and succeeded in the land grabs, but not before they had to come to, even if it was a token, you know, lip service agreement.
Yeah.
Whereas in Canada, we were defeated, we were oppressed, and it was not ever considered to keep that culture in our government, in daily life, in, you know, a lot of the place names that are now being restored in New Zealand, and it's beautiful to see that. But it was a very, very different dynamic. You know, I think coming, especially in my experience, coming to a new country, coming to New Zealand, I find that coming here made me more yearn more for knowledge of my Indigenous ancestry in Canada.
Yeah.
Because here it's, you know, you start your evening news saying kia ora. You know, it's part of the whole culture here.
Mm.
And
a lot of people don't like the news starting with kia ora.
That's so surprising.
That's the frustrating thing, is there's a lot of racism in this country, and I've lived through it in Christchurch, especially in Christchurch. I got called the N-word in Invercargill at a KFC once, and I was like, I'm just eating my KFC, like, and I'm not.
You're just existing.
Weird.
How dare you?
Yeah. But you're talking about, you were brought up on a house bus. You were brought up traveling. Whānau of musicians.
Mm.
Did you ever stop and go, oh, I just want my own bed. I just want, Mom, get off. I just want to, you know.
Yeah, well, it's funny because growing up in a motorhome, touring across the United States and Canada for the better part of a decade, I used to look at kids who grew up in the same house with a picket fence and a dog and had all the same friends their whole lives. I just, you know, my husband is kind of one of those people. He's always lived in Auckland and has the same friends he's had since he was 9 years old. and to me, that's so exotic. That's so like, wow. You know, whereas people are like, wow, your life was so incredible. You got to grow up touring with your family and you know, living this motorhome in a tour bus. And like, that seems exotic to the average person, but when it's not your, that was my normal.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, normal is exotic, you know?
You want to just go do pee-pee poo-poo in the same toilet every day instead of, like, motels, hotels. See, I love touring, I love travelling, and that would have been my perfect life. We couldn't afford to travel. Like, my mum was gigging, but, you know, like, in town or on the coast or something like that. But that would be my absolute, I would have loved that life. I would have loved it. My dad was a travelling gypsy.
Yeah.
And when I was with him, we would travel and hitchhike and do all the crazy things. But, oh, so lucky. So you're basically, your whole childhood is just stemmed in music.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to, like, my therapist the other day. That says a lot, right?
Everyone needs a therapist.
Yeah. I was talking to her saying, I don't know whether it's healthy or not, but music is so wrapped up in my identity. It's who I am. It's in my DNA. And to kind of separate that out as like, it's just a job.
Who says it's just a job, though?
My therapist.
Ooh!
We had words.
It's not a job. It's you.
I think she was talking about healthy work boundaries, and life boundaries.
Because you're a workaholic.
Well, I'm not a workaholic. I don't think you can be a workaholic if you have kids. Mm. It kind of, unless you have something
a
has
nanny?
To give. Yeah, if you have a nanny,
or
maybe
a supportive partner who looks after them the whole time.
Yeah, maybe if you have that, but you don't have the time to be a workaholic.
No.
But in the times that I do have, I think when you're self-employed and you are the one who is the business, you are the business. You never switch off.
Has your therapist said, what would you do if you weren't a singer? Because that was my last question. What would you do if you weren't Tammy Nielsen?
If I weren't a singer.
If you weren't a singer. You couldn't play a guitar, couldn't do the... Yeah. The harmonica.
I'd probably, she'd probably make a lot of money.
CEO of Air New Zealand.
No, I mean my therapist would make a lot of money because I'd be going, who am I? I definitely had a kind of, you know, what we call a come to Jesus moment in my background.
Yeah.
I went into hospital for a very standard procedure. Well, it was supposed to be like 4 hours.
Yeah.
And it led to complications. It was just having gallstones, having my gallbladder out. But what ended up happening were there were complications. I ended up getting sepsis and a collapsed lung and being in hospital for over a month. And that is a moment where you're like, what am I doing on this earth? Am I in the right place? Who am I without my music? Because when you have a collapsed lung and you can barely breathe, I'm like, I'm never going to sing again. Is this me now forever? And so I definitely had those moments of like, I've had that kind of twice in my life. First, when I moved to New Zealand and I knew nobody and nothing here. And I thought, this is the one time I could decide to be anyone. I could leave music behind. I could do something else. And I, you know, chose to continue on that path because I'm like, well, I can't, that's not a choice for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm continuing to be who I am, even if it means I have to start from zero again.
Which you did.
Which is very, you know, daunting. But then coming to that moment of kind of going, what if I can't sing again? What would that look like?
And?
I think that it changes your perspective hugely, that you realize that, yes, it is, I feel it's my purpose, on being on this earth to, you know, what I sing about, what I write about, you know, standing up for equality for women in our industry or encouraging people, uplifting people, empowering people. I know, I feel that's my purpose in what I'm here for. But if that was taken away, I could do it without music. I could still fulfill my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Without music, which is very, even saying those words, I'm like, just kidding, just kidding.
Yeah.
But I think you realize in those moments, like, everything boils down to the only thing I thought of was my family, my children. You know, those were the things that I didn't think about music. You know, when I was kind of on these crazy morphine visions of seeing like my family on one path and having to leave this earth on the other, my guitar was not in that vision.
So it's just a job then?
It is just a job, which is, that is crazy to me. She said that at the end of our session and I had to leave. And this is why we're having this conversation. You're my therapist now?
I'd make a good therapist. Because I forget so much. I'd forget everything you told me, but I'd give you some really good words of advice. Okay. You meet and fall in love with a Kiwi person. How did you meet?
I came here to visit a girlfriend, a Canadian girlfriend, who had moved here to marry a New Zealander.
Oh, you Canadian.
We get suckered in by the cute accents, you know?
Really?
Yeah. Have you heard our accents? Totally, eh? We all sound like we're from Fargo, eh?
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Mongoosh.
How about it?
Fall in love with Grant. Can we say his name?
We can say his name.
Grant. Yes. And you're talking about starting over. I remember meeting you years ago. Was it at the pub on the corner?
Yeah.
And you sang at the open mic night. And it was me.
You and Anna. Julia Deans.
Yes.
Anna Coddington.
We were having a girls' night.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember you on stage and I was like, bitches. That's our bitch. That's our bitch. And that was that, eh? We were just in the clip.
I still remember that moment so clearly. I was so nervous because it was like friggin' music industry power table. And I'm like, really? I have to get up here with just my guitar and sing. And you guys just embraced me into the fold. And you know, as a person who has kind of been uprooted and come across the world, I mean, I'd probably been here, I don't know, 5 years by the time I met you guys. But when you move to somewhere new, when you move to a new country, you quickly realize that people kind of establish their friendships through school in their early 20s, you know, and then you just don't have time to keep bringing on extra people into the fold. And so when you kind of hit your 30s, it's like, you know, it's really hard to establish new friend groups. Or as somebody who's coming into a new country in your 30s, you're like, oh my gosh, it was
I remember
really
you saying
daunting.
How hard it was to meet people, like-minded people. I remember that. And I remember thinking, really? But you're so awesome. Like, come on, let's go.
I mean,
come on, bitch.
But it's not, again, it's nothing to do with, like, whether people click with you and you're a great person or you have a connection. It's just people don't tend to think outside of their friend circle,
you know?
And so when you guys kind of, like, scooped me into the fold, it was, it was, like, meant more
Such
to me than
night.
You knew. Yeah, it was really, it was a real defining moment of, like, being kind of embraced and welcomed into relationships. My music family, my music business family in New Zealand. Yeah.
And, but the thing is with your, because I'd heard about you before meeting you. I'd heard about you in the country music trap. So, and I back in the days, I had all the time in the world to listen to music, to go to gigs, to form relationships with other people musically.
Don't before now. Kids. We love our kids, but before kids.
BK. AK,
yeah.
Like before Christ, after Christ, before kids, after kids. So what did you think of the New Zealand music industry once you were, you know, ingrained in it? You know, he had Dynamite, which was a really popular album, and then you've released like what, five now? Kingmaker being your last.
Oh goodness.
So how many you've one, two,
since
three,
then?
Four, five since I've known you. Did you release any more before that?
I had a couple before that were kind of like going back home to Canada, the kitchen table sessions. So it was just some acoustic stuff with my brother, as you know, because I didn't know anyone here yet. So it was kind of doing stuff there. And then Dynamite was 10 years ago now, which is crazy. So it was Dynamite,
Don't
Be
Afraid,
Sassafras,
Chickaboom.
And
Kingmaker.
It's been five here in New Zealand.
What's the process like for you? And do you enjoy working with Kiwi musicians? Like, you know, it's quite a sausage fest.
Well,
it's a sausage fest, let's be honest.
See, I find that the industry is definitely, and I mean, we're talking the music business in New Zealand and globally. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there is a very skewed percentage of male and female and non-binary as well. And so, you know, in my world, when you're looking at country music, particularly across North America, in 2022, last year, only 10% of country music radio was made up of women. So when you're talking about, it's just such a huge imbalance. I tend to kind of work in a genre that is even worse than the norm. Very traditional, right-leaning audiences. That too. And so there's a lot of that inequality. When it comes to working, with creating something with my team or my band, I work a lot with my brother Jay still, even though he's overseas. And so when you're looking at musicians, you know, the reality is there are, as you say, there's way more men than women in our industry. That's starting to change. I think people are starting,
to change. Yeah.
But it's still such a long way to go. But my band that I work with, I love them.
I know,
so much.
I love them too. Yeah. They were my old band. Well, you know, when I was touring,
when I stole them from you.
You stole them. Yes.
I was like, thank you for embracing me and being my friend. And now I'm gonna steal your band. It's not quite how it happened.
No, I just had kids and couldn't tour.
Oh, you know what's gonna happen?
What?
Clickbait. Tammy Nielsen and Anika Moa's feud. This is gold
this is
right
good.
Now.
This is good for your album sales.
It is.
I don't want to do music ever again.
What's that? Are you in that place?
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
I can't even... I'm just so tired. I'm so tired.
It's a hard fight.
I've got an idea for a lawn mowing business. Okay? Or...
But you know what? That could be such, like, mental health.
More, you know? Lawns.
Oh, my gosh.
Lawn mower.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, isn't that brilliant? But also to join the Te Pāti Māori as well. Because I just want to start activism-ing. Except for I don't do hikoes.
But the thing is, I think it would be super healthy to do something outside of music so that you can do music because you love it.
Yes.
Not because you have to...
Pay the bills
with it. That would be a beautiful spot to be, I think. Yeah.
Well, it's definitely food for thought. But
I don't think New Zealand will let you
quit
music. I'm sorry.
Do you reckon?
I reckon. There would be an uproar. You're going to get all sorts of letters after this.
I'll get letters of support from lots of 60-year-olds called Paul saying, oh, thank God you're fucking retired.
From that person in Invercargill. They'll be like, good, finally.
Oh,
she can't buy KFC anymore.
I love KFC. Do you get lots of complaints?
I think that in the...
Public opinion?
Absolutely. Like, I think that in the business that we're in, it is so... We're putting ourselves out there completely. We're so vulnerable and open, and we're so visible. And we're in an industry that values youth and beauty and slimness over everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
And that industry isn't going to change, but we are building something outside of that industry. Your audience that you've built is outside of the framework of the industry.
You know what? I don't even... Being thin, beautiful, all that kind of shit, it just is not even on my radar. I don't even follow people on Instagram. You know, I'm not being thinnest, but I see people like myself on Instagram, you know, warriors, Māori, moko kauai, singers, you know.
I always say, like, the way my body looks is the least interesting thing about me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's absolutely the least interesting thing about me. And if that's so important to who, if it's the most important thing to someone, that person and I have nothing in common.
People get so offended, if you're not stick thin. Mm. Like, how dare you offend me, my eyes, with your body? Yeah. Whereas I'm like, offend me all you want, baby. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's, well, we're all so conditioned by the culture that we're in. And, you know, 100 years ago, it was favorable to have fat and curves and be a bigger woman or a man because it showed you were prosperous and you could afford money at a time where people were starving. Right? We would be seen as these...
On our thrones with our KFC. How much money have you got?
But it's crazy to me, like, people, appearance, culture has always dictated what's desirable and not. And a lot of that culture is based on misogyny because the world was run by men.
I remember a while ago, you were talking to me, you were doing a show, I think, in London, and someone came up to you and went, hey, oh no, it was in Wellington, I think, hey, where are your kids?
Oh, yeah.
Where are your kids? So there's also that stigma attached to a woman going away and working. And what did you say?
Always. No, the question was, and this, it cracked me up because this was on International Women's Day.
Yep.
And it was an elderly man.
Of course. Called Paul, probably.
Called Paul. And he came up and said, so how come you're out here having fun while your husband's at home babysitting? And I said, first of all, when they're his flesh and blood, it's not called babysitting, it's called parenting, which I do most of the time. But when I have to go away for my work, I take care of, he takes care of our children. When he goes away to work every day, I take care of our children. It's a balance. It's equality. It's a thing called equality.
You actually took the time to tell him. Like, you actually took the time to...
I did back then. I don't anymore. Yeah. That was probably like 7 or 8 years ago that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, you're kind of arguing to a brick wall a lot of the time. But I let my music speak for itself. Mm-hmm. And I often say, you know, when people get offended when you talk about equality or feminism, which is just like I saw someone recently say, we should stop calling it feminism. It's just called being a normal human being. When, when you believe that men and women should be equal, sexist is the thing that's not normal.
Yeah.
So when people get offended by those things or say, oh, you're too political. You're always man bashing. And when I'm simply only talking about equality,
I also think your experiences as well.
And my personal, that's all you can write about your personal experiences. I have to remember that they're not mad at me. You know, music holds up a mirror. And what you see in that mirror is how you experience the music. So if you hear a sad song and it reflects how you're feeling, it can help you ease your grief. It can express how much you love someone. It's because music is a mirror, and you only experience what you see in it. And so when they see those things, they're just seeing their own reflection. They're not seeing what I'm saying. It's a reaction and of their own reflection. So I kind of go, oh, this is between you and the song. It's not actually about me.
Swipe right. Would you have thought like that as a 20-something-year-old Tammy?
No, absolutely not.
What would be going through your brain? Would you be wanting to appease people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a huge part of, you know, the person that I was at 18, 20, even 30, you know, it's been a growth journey. And this is why our industry values youth over everything, because it's moldable, it's exploitable.
Mm-hmm.
You can take advantage of that lack of knowledge and experience.
Yeah.
You know, and when we look at our industry and how they intentionally exclude women, you know, of a certain age, or women who aren't young and moldable, you know, I've had people say that I'm hard to manage or I'm difficult.
Oh, I've had that too. And crazy.
But all that means...
I'd agree with that one. I'm pretty mental.
Yeah, but that's... All that means is you're difficult to take advantage of.
Yes, thank you.
You're hard to manage because you know more than they do.
I had that my whole 20s and early 30s. Difficult, crazy, and it's all because I wanted to do it my way. And it wasn't, you know, appeasing all these men in the industry who were, lose weight, don't talk about being gay.
Shut up and sing.
Shut up and sing, yeah. I heard that song the other day and I was crying in the car.
Mm.
I just want to talk a little bit about, you've had some huge highlights, you know, we're going to talk about Willie Nelson, but you've also had some really awful things happening to you. I want to talk about your papa passing away, because that's had a huge impact on you.
That is something, I think when you lose a parent, and I'm, you know, I'm told that because I had a wonderful relationship with my dad.
Yeah.
There are many people who don't experience that. But whether you've had a healthy or unhealthy relationship with a parent, I think when you lose a parent, it is like your world gets knocked off its axis. Mm. It's kind of like that constant, you kind of reevaluate everything. Everything is untethered and unmoored, and you're kind of like quite lost for a while, kind of finding your identity outside of that that influence over your life. And for my dad, you know, being not only a wonderful father but one of the main influences in my musical career, being a musician himself and teaching me everything he knew, laying the foundation that I now stand on. It has always been, you know, my music is definitely a huge part of why behind what I do is to honor his legacy and to carry on his legacy. And so everything I do is always, you know, it's always in your head like, oh, Dad would just be over the moon about this, or I wish I could share this with Dad, or he'd be so proud of this.
Is your mom jealous of that?
That's like, something to discuss with my therapist, Anika.
It's just a job, God.
But yeah, I think that when you lose a parent, it's like, it's something that... It does. It kind of rocks your whole world like nothing else does. And it comes through in your life experience. And it does. It pours out in my music, whether it be in missing and grieving, because grief is just love with nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And as trite as that might sound, it's so true. And so it pours out in my music, but it pours out in my purpose, because I feel like I need to carry that on.
Yeah.
Because it's honoring him.
Well, what better way than to write a song about your dad passing and Delaney's dad passing, and then having Willie Nelson sing a duet with you. That's like a career highlight from such a mumai from you.
Mm.
So can you tell me how did you even like score that? Like, Willie Nelson. It's like, oh, kia ora, Willie, can you sing on my song, please?
Yeah. It was just exactly that. Yeah. No, it was
Tell me the story.
It was one of those moments, like, and it's still, I still can't believe it exists in the world. And I still can't believe he said yes. And
so you write the song Beyond the Stars.
I wrote Beyond the Stars with Delaney one day, you know, just talking about our dads. And we were talking specifically about, you know, when you have a dream of someone you've lost.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And you don't want to wake up, and you can feel yourself wake up, and you're trying to stay in that, and you feel like you're getting to spend time with them.
Oh, totally.
And
it's real and true.
Yeah, and it's like this stolen moment. I rarely dream of my dad, and so it's a real treasure when I do. And so we were just talking about that, and then he had this line, Beyond the Stars, and we kind of it was like this dream of like getting to reunite with them in the sky, and there's guitars and dancing, like kind of swirling through the stars. And so we wrote the song to be about me singing to my dad in the first verse, and then the second verse is him singing to me. And when it came to record the song, I thought, like, who on earth could fill the shoes of my dad? And this was in the midst of kind of in and out of lockdowns during the pandemic. Yeah. So what had happened, to kind of go back to how the connection with Willie came about, I was asked to perform at his festival. It's Luck Reunion Festival, which is on his ranch in Texas every year during South by Southwest week.
No big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. It, honestly, I was like, I'm hanging my whole life on this. This is so exciting. And it was the week, March 2020, that the world shut down.
Okay.
The week before the festival.
So you couldn't do it?
Couldn't do it. Everything, the world got canceled, South by Southwest canceled, Luck Festival canceled, and they got in touch with me and they said, they were one of the very first to move it online and say, we're going to do it online. If you could like beam in from New Zealand and do like two or three songs.
Wow.
And you'll be in the festival lineup. And the crazy thing is, you know how it is on festivals. If I had gone, I would have, you know, I being a new artist, I would have been on at like 11 a.m.
Yep.
No one would have been
Four
there.
People.
You know how it is. Yeah. I wouldn't have probably even met Willie Nelson. Like, I would have been lucky to see him that night at 11 p.m., you know, from the audience watching him on stage. But as it was, because it got moved on to online, the whole family was watching. Willie and his family were watching the festival.
Whoa!
And I only knew this years later, that the organizer of the festival said to me, you know, when you came on and started singing, Willie's wife was texting me going, holy beep. Like, I don't know if we can. She's like, who the is this?
Wow.
And she was saying how much, like, Willie is a fan. And I'm like, what? And so after I did that performance, all of a sudden, I had a huge influx of new followers online. And one of those followers was this woman named Annie on Twitter. And every time I'd post something, she'd, like, respond. And we, you know, would just chat back and forth on Twitter like, you know, you do. And it wasn't until, like, 2 or 3 months later, she then followed my brother Jay, because she saw that, you know, we were connected. And when she followed him, he looked at her bio and he said, do you realize who Annie is that you've been talking to for like...
Who's Annie?
Willie's wife.
So
I was like Twitter besties with Willie's wife and I didn't even realize it.
Okay.
And so we ended up like having this friendship online, and I ended up putting out a single Pretty Paper of Willie's for Christmas. It was just for a Sirius XM thing I'd done that they asked me to do this acoustic thing. This was before I knew him, and it came out at Christmas. And so then she saw it, and she messaged me and said, Willie's, he's just listened, and he loves your version. And
how cool.
He loves it. And then she DM'd me and said, we just want you to have our number. So you don't just have to talk to us on Twitter, like, you know, just be in touch whenever.
Whoa.
And I'm like, have you been hacked? So it's like, is this really?
So how did you get your song? So obviously you emailed this, like, your song to.
Yeah, well, a year and a half later. So we had this friendship, and we'd text all the time, and I'd send her inappropriate Willie Nelson memes. And
I wonder if he ever saw them.
Which I'm sure she already, like, has them all. She's seen them all. But, yeah, it came time to record this song. And I didn't even think of shooting for that level. And my brother joked and said, oh, why don't you ask your new best friend, Willie Nelson, to sing it with
the
you.
The best joke ever.
And I'm like, and I was kind of like, and then my heart started pounding, and I just thought, oh, but I don't want to ruin our friendship. Like, yeah, I'm like, sure everyone's saying, like, yeah, oh, yeah. You've been playing the long game for 18 months, and now you're going to spring this on us like everybody else, you know? So it was I was very sensitive about it not ruining our friendship. And so it took me like months to get up the courage to even ask.
Damn it.
And I was like shaking and nervous every time I thought about it. And so I finally text her and just said, if this is like, I do not want this to affect our friendship. I'm sure you get this all the time. I would love for him to sing with me, but if this is going to affect anything, delete this text and pretend it never happened. And she came back and said, oh, sure, I'll play it for him. And so long story short, she came back and said he loves it. And yeah, he recorded it. And I remember we were in lockdown, and for some reason my husband was home, which he never is. I think the kids were at Nana's or something. And I was out for a walk, and she was texting saying, he's just finished recording it. We're sending it through. And I'm like racing home, like, and I get home and it's in my inbox, and we put it on over the speakers, and my husband and I just sat on the couch and just cried.
Aww.
And listened to it just crying. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, this is
the best moment in your life.
Not the best, but up there. You know, you can't say that.
Why not?
Your children, right? You can't say
that's
best.
Right.
Let's say. They might be watching, so...
That's so funny, because I was
You're like, of course it is.
I was telling
Marigold. What else could it possibly be?
I was telling Marigold the other day, but I always explain how she was born. I go, oh, Mama was pregnant, and then they cut Mama's puku open, and then... And then Tani's like, what happened with me? And I was like, oh, yeah. Anyway, Marigold...
Changing the subject.
Hey, you're also my delight. Whatever. Calm down. That's what happens when you're a lesbian and you have a child that isn't born from your vajayjay.
It's just all hush hush, eh?
Yeah, well, so, pain. Sorry.
Oh, okay, my gosh, so, what were we saying?
Willie
best
Nelson,
thing.
Best,
like,
kids are yes. the best thing, but Willie Nelson's a close second.
I would say, like, highlight of my musical career, best, like...
Not singing on stage with me.
After that. So we were saying,
delete
we can
that
edit
text.
That part. Yeah.
I want to know some other things, because we've gone through your music, your song. We haven't really touched on your songwriting, but I mean, come on, it's brilliant. You think we don't?
We can skip that. It's brilliant.
Like, I like knowing about your personal life because it's so bloody interesting. So what's next for you? What's your 5 year? Because I know you do 5 year plans.
Oh,
I know this about you.
Well, so this past year, we went on kind of this once-in-a-lifetime trip where we went for almost 6 months in an RV across Canada and the States.
Reliving your youth.
Yeah. I walked onto that motorhome and I was like, my therapist is going to have a heyday with this. I was like, immediately was like, what am I doing? So talk about repeated behaviors.
So you take your kids out of school, you all fly to America.
And we drive all the way across and all the way back over 5 months.
Doing gigs along the way?
Doing gigs along the way.
Experiencing Grand Canyon, experiencing all the beautiful delights of America.
Just amazing. And it was like, I thought it was, you know, because I talked about for years saying to my husband, you know, my manager at the time was in Canada was always saying, if you need to be on the ground here. Mm-hmm. You need to be in the market for me to make any headway, because if you're not, then it's just impossible kind of thing. I mean, duets with Willie Nelson, but anyway.
So behind the scenes is not a pretty picture.
No, I kind of went there to like hit it as hard as I could and try to make a dent in my music. But then all of the health stuff happened. And so really the whole time was spent like healing and taking it very slow, building up again, lowering the keys to my songs, building up that collapsed lung again. You know, so it was, but what a beautiful gift to do that with my whole family there. Because the thing I hate most about touring, the hardest thing about touring, and it's hard right now, is being away from my family. And the whole time your heart is in another country, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so to have them all there with me doing this trip, while I healed, it built my confidence again, kind of brought me back to be able to do what I do for a living. It was not at all the trip I thought it was going to be. I thought, like, this is the time to hit it hard. And it was, I could not physically do it. And it was like life giving me this gift going, this is what this trip is for. It's to, connect again with your family.
I love this.
For your children to see you heal after they went through the trauma of almost losing you.
Yeah, yeah.
For your husband to be there to see you heal and support you. And for them to experience life on the road, they fully understand now when I go away, it's not fun and games. Of course, there's fun involved, elements of fun, but they see it's work,
and
you know?
Their mama is a hard worker.
Exactly. Yeah. I felt also a grieving process of like pinning all my hopes on like, this is going to shift the needle. And that's not what it was for. And so going forward, my plans going forward have changed so much since this past year has been such a, I don't know, an eye-opening time and a real shift in my perspective and the importance of family and love and my relationship with my kids. And I think that it's redefined my idea of success.
I love it.
Yeah, because I think, you know, we have these ideas of like, this is what success looks like. I remember a woman just a few months ago opening an interview saying she was a fan, and it was for, you know, a show I had coming up. And she said, oh, I'm a big fan, but she was interviewing me, and I just can't believe that you're not a global success. Like, you should be, you're so good, you should be a superstar. And I said, and I thought about that, and I said, you know, I don't want to be. I don't, for me, success is not being a global superstar. It is, you know, all those things that we define. I realized that a lot of my goals were my 18-year-old goals.
Mm-hmm.
I am not an 18-year-old anymore. They're the dreams of an 18-year-old that a 46-year-old mother cannot fulfill and does not want to fulfill. I don't have the energy or the time or the F's to give. And so I think in our business, ambition can be, it's what drives us. It's what keeps us propelling forward and growing. And it can be a good thing, but it can also be a disease.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, that we are always striving for the next thing and not looking at where we are.
I'm only going to ask you a few more questions because we've been like talking for like 15 hours, which I love. Do you believe in love at first sight?
Hmm.
Shit. therapist?
I believe in attraction at first sight.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that you can, that that can spark a love that you have to work on and choose that person every day for the rest of your life, if that's what you mean by long-lasting love. But yes, I think that you can have that attraction.
Yeah.
And that can drive you to keep falling in love with that person over and over. Because we're not, I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago, 10 years ago,
yeah,
20 years ago. And Grant and I have been together for, oh my God,
almost 20 something.
Almost 20 years. And I think that, and not married the whole time, but like dating and then marriage. But to be with someone for 20 years, he has been with multiple versions of me that are not the, yeah, woman he fell in love with or married. And I'm with multiple, same with him, multiple versions of him. He's not the same man. There are elements that are obviously kind of those foundational things, like not being a jerk and, you know, but we have seen the best in each other and we've seen the absolute worst. And if you want to find out who you really are as a person, have kids. They bring out your absolute best,
mm-hmm,
and they make the worst version of yourself,
yeah,
because you are driven to the core. You're like, I've never been so sleep deprived. I have never been so selfless, having to cater to this tiny tyrant's every whim that doesn't even talk yet, you know? And you're driven to this point of like, this is who I really am at my worst.
Yeah.
I never used to swear before kids.
So that was the longest,
that was a glowing
answer.
Endorsement. But
that was a long,
and people are
going to
think that we don't love, but I love our children. But yes, I feel like, yes, you can have love at first sight, but to have that love last is a continual choice.
How do you stay married? Because I've been married twice. I don't even believe in marriage. Why did I get married? It was a good party.
I think marriage is like a legal, it's a symbol. It's a symbol, right? Of what's in your heart. If you want it to be, if you want it to be, I don't think that a document or it's a choice that you make every day.
Well, thank you for enlightening me. I love your stories. I love everything that you've created around you. And I have a lot of respect for you. And I hope you go well for 2024.
Thank you.
That is, it's personal with Anika Moore. Ka kite anō.
So profesh.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening to It's Personal with me, Anika Moore. Ngā mihi to our beautiful, awesome guest today, Tammy Nielsen. Also to the team that helps make this happen, Charlotte Purdy and Vanessa Hawken from Rogue Productions, Tim Watkin and Liz Garten from RNZ, and our audio engineers Blair Stagpool and Adrian Holley. Cole Easton-Farrelly is a video editor, and thanks to Jane Joyce for graphics and Brianna Juritich for production support. It's Personal with Anika Moore is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Don't forget to follow so you don't miss an episode.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.